My Govanin, welcome to the Tolkien Lore Channel. I'm the Tolkien Geek, and this is kind of a follow-up to my video that I did a while back on details that Peter Jackson got right in The Fellowship of the Ring. It's kind of the same thing, but in this particular instance, it's less focused on details that he got right, and rather it's more about things that he drops in that are kind of fan service that really only super fans would notice. Like, nobody's going to pick up on this unless they really know the story backward and forward. And in many cases, there are some mild discrepancies with the book, but not in a way that, like, goes totally against the book or anything like that. But it's just interesting to see how Peter Jackson kind of drops these little fan service moments in there. And they're not even really fan service moments per se, because some of them are just, like, little details from the story that don't really impact anything that a lot of people aren't going to remember, but if you really know it, then you know exactly what it's about and why it's there. So let's take a look and see some of the Fellowship of the Rings moments that Peter Jackson managed to really, really dig out of the deepest recesses of the story. So the first one comes really early in the movie when Bilbo is giving his kind of introduction to hobbits, writing his own book, of course. This isn't the very beginning of the movie because we have the prologue, but as far as the present day, so to speak, of the movie, it's right at the very beginning. As he's talking about concerning hobbits, he mentions that there has always been a Baggins living under the hill in Bag End, which is both true and misleading, because in the book what we find out, and actually this comes from The Hobbit more so than The Lord of the Rings, so, you know, but it's all the same story ultimately. What we know from the books is that Bag End was delved and, you know, made into a home by Bilbo's father. Like, it wasn't even a thing before that. And so, yes, it's true that there's never been anybody but a Baggins living in Bag End, but to say that there's always been a Baggins living under the hill is kind of misleading to the uninitiated audience, because it would make you think that there's just a long-standing genealogy of people who have been living in that exact home for generations upon generations, which is simply not true. and I could see why Peter Jackson did that, of course, because the whole emotional punch he's going for is that at the end of the movie, there is no Baggins living in Bag End. Even after the Sackville Bagginses get their hands on it, which isn't really discussed in the movie so much, but it is in the book, ultimately Frodo gives it up and gives it to Sam, which we also don't see in the movie, so Peter Jackson actually kind of ruined that point. But, point being, at the end of the story, there is no Baggins living in Bag End. There just isn't. And that is a counterweight to what Bilbo says at the very beginning of the story. Following fairly closely upon this is another comment by Bilbo, because when Gandalf arrives, he asks if he would like tea or maybe something a little stronger, and goes on to talk about how he has a few bottles of the old Winyards left. 1296, very good year. And he says that it was laid down by his father. All of which is perfectly true and straight out of the book, which, again, this is one of those details that if you didn't really know the story that well, if you read Lord of the Rings one time, thought it was a great story, that is not a reference that you would likely remember after the fact. It is so non-related to the story as to be a pointless remark. Frodo, of course, in the book enjoys a bottle of Old Winyards. In fact, the very last bottle of Old Winyards before surrendering Bag End to the Sackville Bagginses, so as to deprive the Sackville Bagginses of the pleasure of having that particular vintage. But it's just a fun little comment that Bilbo throws in there, which is, it's straight out of the book in every detail, but nobody would know that except somebody who really knew their stuff. Still in the early stages of the movie, we have Bilbo's party, where we get a bunch of fireworks from Gandalf. And if you pay very close attention to the fireworks, all of them are actually as described in the book, with the exception of the dragon, which they took a few liberties with, because in the movie we really just get a dragon that goes up in the air and then comes down and swoops over the crowd directly above their heads. But in the book, it's a little bit more complicated than that, because it actually spins around a cloud that looks like the Lonely Mountain, so it's a direct reference to Bilbo's earlier adventure. But the rest of them are all pretty much as described in the book. There's a bunch of spears, there's a bunch of coins and butterflies. If you read the description in The Lord of the Rings, all of these things are actually described as being some of the fireworks that Gandalf set off. So if you're really curious about this, like, seriously, go watch the movie again and have your book open to that passage and read the description, and you'll be able to go, like, a one-to-one comparison of, oh yeah, that's that one, and that's that one, and that's that one, and that's that one. And the biggest deviation from accuracy is the dragon. So, yeah, nailed all of those details. And again, something that, you know, the casual reader would know that there were fireworks. The casual reader would not remember all the specific details of exactly what those fireworks looked like. All right, finally getting out of the Shire altogether, we get an interesting comment by Sam. In the book, this is actually said by Barlum and Butterbur in a very different context. Sam, whenever he bursts in on Aragorn and Frodo after Aragorn has very unceremoniously hauled Frodo up to a room where they can be alone, Sam and Merry and Pippin behind him burst in, and Sam very combatively says, "Let him go or I'll have you, Longshanks." Longshanks, of course, being a very kind of British-English way of saying long legs, so you're a tall guy with long legs. In the book, Barlum and Butterbur uses this phrase to describe Aragorn because he says that he's called Strider, and he goes about at a great pace on his long shanks. So he's not calling him Longshanks, he is saying that he has long shanks. So it's a slightly different usage of that phrase, and a, you know, maybe a little bit less of a demeaning one. And in his case, it's actually literally descriptive. Now, this is not clear from the book at all, but in some of Tolkien's notes to somebody on a commenting on an illustration, he mentions that Aragorn would have been 6'6", which means he would have indeed had quite long shanks compared to the average even adult male human, let alone a hobbit. So, you know, there is that, but it's really interesting how Sam uses this phrase, which would have been used by Butterbur in the book, to, you know, call Aragorn a name, since he doesn't have one for him, really, at this point, unless he overheard Barlum and Butterbur telling him, you know, that he's called Strider. But it's, again, one of those things, it's just this one little off comment that Butterbur makes in the story that you probably wouldn't remember just having read it one time casually. Alright, the final one I'm going to cover in this video, and there may be some others that I might cover in a later video from the Fellowship of the Ring, but I've really only gotten through watching about the first half of it again, and this is, I need to get a short video out anyway because I'm in a time crunch. You don't need to know that. At any rate, the next one is the timing of the Beren and Luthien song. It's interesting because, again, this is one of those things, casual readers are famous for not reading the poetry in Tolkien. And Aragorn, of course, delivers the story of Beren and Luthien partially in poetic form. And if you're a casual reader of The Lord of the Rings, you've almost certainly not read the Silmarillion, and therefore you're not that familiar with the Beren and Luthien story to begin with. Now, in the movie, what we get is Aragorn singing very softly to himself in Elvish, which is not how he does it in the book. And Frodo just overhears him and asks him, "Who is this woman that you speak of?" This is also a bit of a nod to the book in and of itself, because it shows that Frodo knows his Elvish, which of course we know from the book because he greets Gildor and the elves with him in the High Elven tongue. And then Bilbo will later remark to Frodo, "I thought I taught you enough Elvish to know that Dúnedain is Man of the West." So there's kind of a double reference here. We get Aragorn singing the Lay of Luthien, or Lay of Lathien, depending on how you want to call it, to himself close to the time that he would have sung it in the book, because in the book it happens at Weathertop just before the attack of the Black Riders. Here it happens while they're still in or very near the Midgewater Marshes, and therefore they're coming up on Weathertop pretty soon. So it's a slight displacement, and another one of those things that you know, if you're a casual reader, you might have skipped over the poetry altogether and got kind of a little bit of a synopsis from Aragorn in prose, and then forgot all about that story, because it's the main relevance it has is to Aragorn's life and the fact that he's going to marry Arwen, who is, like himself, Luthien's descendant. So, you know, if you know your Silmarillion and your Tolkien and your Lord of the Rings, then you're going to get this and you're going to understand it. But the first time you read the Lord of the Rings, you have no framework for any of this. And so again, the casual reader who's read The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings like one time, probably never touched the Silmarillion, not going to really retain that. But those of us who really understand all that stuff will know, you know, what he's talking about. We'll know the significance of it. And we'll also know that, hey, we're getting Frodo Knows Elvish in here too. So it's kind of a twofer. So like I said, short video for now because I'm under a bit of a time crunch, but hopefully I'll get a chance to do some more of these as I get through more of the movies and catch some more of these little details. It seems like there's more of them in The Fellowship of the Ring than most everywhere else. But I love how subtle most of these are, and they're not over the top, and they're not, like I said before, not strictly speaking fan service. I mean, they kind of are in some ways, but some of them are just little details that are thrown in there as kind of almost Easter eggs more than fan service. But if you enjoyed this look at little details, then please do give the video a thumbs up, share it around. If you do want me to do more videos like this, let me know. Otherwise, you know, I'm not going to make tons of videos that nobody's interested in. But if you want to catch more of my content regardless, make sure you subscribe. Click the bell icon if you're on YouTube. Follow me on Twitter, or what used to be known as Twitter, for Tolkien-related trivia questions. And, of course, find other social and support links in the description below. Until the next time, I'm the Tolkien Geek, signing out for the Tolkien Lore Channel. Namarie. Thanks to all my channel supporters, especially Paul Leone, Nathan Dufour, and Robert Kindling.